you love takeaway, travel, and international cuisines, then you're going to love the Takeaway Man podcast. Join Kevin Kerwin, the Takeaway Man, as he searches for the best international food delivery services accompanied by popular musicians, comedians, and artists. But here's the catch. Each guest gets to pick their a food delivery service, order their unique menu items for up to $20, and give a thorough review on it so you can get the best value for your money next time you order takeaway. You can also enjoy the entire experience on Instagram by following at The Takeaway Man. Sit back and turn up the volume because Kevin is here.
How's everybody? So we are here with Daniel Lang, the Lango Drums, the main man, for the Takeaway Man podcast. So this episode of the Takeaway Man podcast is basically going to be all dedicated to Lango, the main man about town. It leads it, well, I don't know, we'd be one of the singers in the Scratch, the cajon player in the Scratch. He's played drums for Red Enemy. He's also in the Hit Machine, and he was one of the drummers for Monuments, which is pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
And he lived around the corner from me in Castleknock, so which is a pretty big deal. This is it, the Takeaway Man podcast. So there's Dan's quick introduction. So thank you so much for being on the podcast, Dan. And so how's things?
Good. Can I open this now?
Man, far away. Yeah.
Do you want to know what I got?
So we're gonna go with the first things first is drinks. What drinks did you get?
Well, we went for a Coke. Oh, do you know when they put the can in with the food though? I'm not gonna say I hate it, but I'm like, it's just warming up the can, which is kind of like a pet peeve of mine. So.
That's exactly it. So
it's minus 1 point for that. Anyway, I've also never had this before. I thought, like, do you know what? I'm just going to try something new because I'm a serious creature of habit when it comes to takeaway. And I just thought this would be a great occasion to just step out of my comfort zone.
Well, you know what? It's really funny that you say that because that's what this whole podcast was about. So I've been an event manager in Dublin for, I don't know how many years, and doing... You know yourself when you're playing a show in a venue that you've never played before, and with the bands and stuff like that that I've brought over, they'd always be like, where's good to go to eat or all that kind of stuff. Not only that, is that when we were doing the interviews and stuff like that with bands, is that if you weren't the main bill, like if you weren't headlining, you were pretty much feeding yourself, like when it came to riders and stuff like that, and you were going to be having 5-day-old grapes that have been sitting in a van for however long. So that's pretty much how this podcast came about, is that we were going to interview basically any of the musicians that were in the middle of touring and give them a good substantial meal, the magical substantial meal, so they can sit down and have a good meal and then go on and play the gig afterwards. So that's pretty much how it all came about. But now you're 100% right when it comes to the cans in with the bag. There's only one place that I've noticed that does it, and that's Domino's. Domino's are the only place that'll give you a separate bag compared to like all the other stuff. It's a fucking
it's a minor detail that makes all the difference. Like when you take out a can of Coke, when I look at a can of Coke, I want to see the condensation just on the edge of the Coke. That's what makes me thirsty just looking at it, you know. And then so when you take it out, like, it's all gone, it's not on, you know, it's not this is kind of just warm now. It's kind of just like if it's that temperature where when you go to your granny's house and she asks you, do you want a mineral, and then she's got a few like bottles of 7-Up out in the garage, like, so it's kind of cold, but like it's not fucking freeze the teeth off you cold.
You need, like, for a good can of Coke, you need your eyes to water afterwards. You need it to hit your throat. You're like, ooh.
That kind of loss of breath.
Yeah.
Feeling. That's what you want.
So, with the meal that you got, is it like a meal deal for two? What way did it work out?
A meal for one. So, I'll be honest, I can't remember what I ordered because I just saw the meal for one option and then I just started clicking shit. So, I think I got chicken, and I think I got, actually, do you know what, I do know what one of them is. One of the boxes is wedges with, like, cheese on it, I think. Should I'll open it now.
Give it a bash, yeah.
Let's see what the crack is.
So, While you're opening that, I'll let everybody know what I got. So I got the classic staple 4-in-1.
Oh, beautiful.
So it's just your standard 4-in-1, but I got beef in it. Oh. And so that's what I got. It's your kind of standard. I don't know if you can get these anywhere else in Ireland. Like, I think this is an Irish kind of thing. I'm not too sure. But then, and then for the drink, I went with a Trouble Brew. I went with a sneaky little pale ale. So being a bit naughty on a Thursday afternoon, you know.
Okay, here we go. You're right. So I know what I got. I got takeaway from Boxties. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah, I haven't had it now.
So I got some like chicken thing. I don't know what the fuck, man. So this is one of them wedges, like big, massive homemade wedges.
Happy days.
Cheese, and it's like, it's got like some spring onion in there. They look delicious. And then there's this. I know there's chicken in it. Looks like a couple of roasties in there, some onion. I don't know, man. I'll give it a fucking taste, though.
Oh, yeah, sure. Give it a bash there. I'll plate this up and let you have a bit of food. And then we can go into the next couple of questions.
That's pretty decent.
Is it good?
So far, so good, yeah. I don't know. What is that I'm eating, though? I don't know what I'm eating. Like, it's like a strange texture.
What kind of vegetables and stuff are in?
Okay, definitely chicken. okay, so there's, I think that's a spud. And then, oh no, is that? No, that's chicken as well. Okay. what's this? That's good. What I'm after eating there, it looks like a little potato cube, but it has the texture of gnocchi.
Oh yeah, like kind of like the potato pasta stuff.
Yeah, so it's kind of got like it's chewier than your typical potato cube. So yeah, very gnocchi. I'm gonna look up what I actually ordered.
Yeah, well, what was it? So you got it from Boxty. They're based in Dublin.
Yeah,
and would that be classed as your sort of local now, or is it?
Only up the road, like it's in Talla. So I'm based in Perrystown, so like 10 minutes up the road.
Happy days.
Boxy House in Talla, yeah, where is, okay, what did I get? Few orders. Okay, let's have a look at this. Few order. I got stir fried chicken and vegetable box the dumpling.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Happy days.
And then I got the fresh homemade wedges loaded with cheese sauce. So I'm going to have a shot of the wedges now.
Yeah, give the wedges a blast, yeah?
Yeah. Very good.
Good, yeah. Happy days.
Pretty decent stuff, yeah.
I don't think, like, you know when you're touring and you're out and, or even, I don't know, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's just like when you're on holidays, you just always go and you're like, oh, I've never had like a vindaloo before. What could ever go wrong? And you go into a restaurant, you sit down and you eat something. And it just always seems to be like when you're putting yourself out into that, into an unknown environment in the first place. And you're like, oh, this could be grand. And 9 times out of 10, it's fine. But it's that one time where you go, you're like, oh, shit, this is super spicy, or, you know, this isn't my kind of cup of tea or whatever.
That's the thing. I'm a bit of a wimp when it comes to like trying local cuisine. If it looks a bit mad, I'm a bit too fussy for that.
Really?
I was in South Africa not last year, the year before, and I just wanted to try biltong. I was like, no, I definitely want to try this.
Yeah.
A friend of mine in school. he came to our school in like fourth year, and he's from South Africa, and he used to talk about it. And I was like, what are you talking about? And it always just stuck with me.
Yeah.
I was like, right, I'm here now. We're in Cape Town, and there was this deli. It was a vineyard slash like gin brewery slash whiskey brewery slash like biltong place, and all in one kind of thing. I was out in this lovely well, like a vineyard looking spot, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there was like, and they also had a bunch of like IPAs or like homebrewed IPAs, like, and so yeah, what was it? What am I saying? I ordered one of those, and then there was this like biltong platter, and it just came out like this huge wooden platter, like full of different types of different spiced biltong, and it was absolutely banging. it was class. And like, we just spent the whole day out there eating biltong, drinking ales, and then they took us on like a wine tasting tour, and they were giving us like cheeses that like accompanied certain wines the best. And yeah, we just had a great old day.
And you know, like when you guys return and stuff like that, has there ever been a time where you've just like, you've done a gig before, like you're just wrecked, you're absolutely exhausted, and then someone turns around to you and they're just like, like, here you go, here's a lot of food, or here's a lot of drinks or whatever, or you have to do like a meet and greet or something, and you're just sort of like, oh man, not today, please, not today. How many times would you reckon that would happen when you return?
It was more like, I remember one day, it was in Denmark. I decided to go for a McDonald's about an hour before we went on. And I've never felt like, I ate the McDonald's, and I think we had a few jars the night before, so I just wasn't feeling great anyway. And I just had it, I slept, kind of just chilled out for the day, stayed in bed, nursed the hangover, and then went and got a McDonald's, and was due on in about an hour, and got the McDonald's into me anyway, and felt absolutely horrendous. Like, I don't know what it was. It might have been just I ate it too fast. Also, it was a McDonald's and I was hungover. It's not what my body needed. And I was super tired. I was weeks into a tour, and my body just had a meltdown. I'd never reacted that badly to a McDonald's before. It never feels great. It never feels great after, you know, the post McDonald's feeling is never great. But no. This was just like, I don't know if I can play this gig. And I remember just thinking, like, I'd rather eat shit. And
that's the thing, though, isn't it? Yeah. And do you know what I always found, like, when especially when you're like, you're working with bands and stuff like that, and you can just, like, luckily enough for me, anytime that I was ever bringing bands and things like that over, they would always start their tour in Dublin or say Belfast or whatever. So that they'd fly in, and like, it's like first show Dublin. And like, we'd always kind of try bring them out and go, all right, here, have a few beers or have a couple of Guinness. And especially I found with the American bands that we were working with, they were like, oh, we want to have a Guinness and Jameson. We have to have a Guinness and Jameson. And you're like, all right, cool. And then it just got to a stage where it's like, it's okay to have that, like have one pint of Guinness and one Jameson. Well, when they were coming over there, like every round was a pint and a shot. And it just came to, I actually got to a stage where I had to just turn around to the guys and was like, lads, have you guys ever drank Guinness before? And they're like, well, yeah, at home. I was like, no. Have you ever been to Dublin and had a rake of pints and a rake of shots? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, right, it's all well and good now, but tomorrow you're going to die. You're all going to be in a van together. You're all going to be farting. It's going to be the worst hangover you've ever had. And you're going to be on a ferry on the way over to England. And more than likely, it's going to be like an 8-hour ferry. You're going to be sitting there and you're going to wish God was cradling you. Like,
hell of all ferries.
But yeah, that's just one thing.
Sorry.
And it's weird though, when you can see a band like that, when they come over and you can see that they're heartbroken. Something's after happening. But when they play that first song, or the intro comes in and it just clicks, and you're just like, boom, the show goes on, and they're halfway through the set, and then afterwards they're like cans or like pints or whatever, and you're like, I thought you were dying there 20 minutes ago. I'm like, I know, it's grand out.
That gig that night where I had the McDonald's, I honestly thought, like, the intro was playing and we were just waiting to go into the first song. I was like, I honestly just don't know if I can do this. And then, like, the lads were looking at me, and I was just like, you know, in bits. And then as soon as the first song started, I just totally forgot about it. And then come the end of the set, I felt fine. And I was just having cans afterward as well. Like, it was just like, it just flushed.
It's mad, isn't it? It's such a crazy kind of feeling. And what would your go-to hangover food be then? Like if you woke up in the morning now, pubs are open, everyone could go out, you have a crazy sesh. What's your hangovers?
That's generally always something greasy, like takeaway of some sort, like probably Domino's actually. It's just I don't have to think about it. I know what I want. It's consistent.
Yeah.
And it means I don't have to get up. Like I if I'm hungover, I really don't want to do anything. Like I'm not one of those people that kind of cleans through their hangover or, you know, like, or just keeps busy. I can't. I just want to sit there.
Yeah.
So that means like not cooking either. So cooking's out the window. So it'll probably be a Domino's. And and a big dirty can of Coke. What's your hangover food of choice?
I started going into ramen. I went into kind of like soups, like little soups and stuff. So I used to get them kind of delivered in, and then like a nice big bowl of ramen was my thing. But and then I was doing instant noodles and stuff. But other than that, then like exact same as yourself. On a Sunday morning, I was ordering Domino's that lunchtime meal, 12:30. Just looking at the little dude going around your phone, going, Grant, and he's outside, and happy days. Even paying through PayPal and everything, was just like, yeah, boom, gone. I don't even need to have cash or like that. It's just done and dusted.
What was the where would you take bands if they wanted to get a pint of Guinness and a Jameson?
If we were based in Dublin, the majority of them always wanted to go to the Brazen Head. They're like, oh, the oldest pub, all that kind of stuff. So they want to go to the Brazen Head. But like when we brought over like Chris Jericho and stuff like that, they weren't really kind of into the pints. Like we put that show was on a Fibbers. Yeah. Put that gig on in Fibbers. But any of the other bands, I just bring them to Sinead and the Keys. Downstairs in Sinead is always a handy little number. Like any of the shows that we would have put on in the Voodoo Lounge, all the after shows would always be in Sinead then afterwards. Like, so did it out. Where would your best point to Guinness be?
My mates love going to Bowes. Do you know where Bowes is?
Where's that?
It's just off Delaney Street, and it's just a little side street off, was it Parnell Street and Delaney Street? It's a little road that connects those two streets, and it's an unbelievable point. It's right around the corner from Doyle's, actually. Whopper Point, lovely point in there. That's the only one I can think of right now.
Have you ever gone to Mary's on Grafton Street, the one that they turned into the hardware pub? It's actually some nice pints of Guinness out of that.
Whopper cheese toastie in there as well. They do. They give you put it in a pint for like a really good deal. I think it's like £7 or something for the whole the same amount of the pint.
Where would we go? I think one of the best places that I've ever had, like the nicest pint of Guinness, was the Gravediggers. Gravediggers is good. Have that out in Glasnevin? Gravediggers is good. Does a good point. And then Mary's, but I don't know. Like it's just kind of mad now when you're reminiscing and sure, Jesus, any pint is a good pint now. At this stage, after what a year and a bit, but it is sort of a crazy situation.
This is a public service gobshite announcement. While I was sitting down having a chat with Dan, I don't know, we ran into some technical difficulties and there was a blip in the noise and the sound that we were recording. And because of that, I have to do a cool voiceover and basically get you up to speed. We were talking about working at festivals, going to festivals and gigging and people who we've hung out with and stuff like that in the last while. And so this is just a smooth transition into where we were talking about festivals and gigs and who we've met in the recent years. So sorry about that. We're still learning, but onwards and upwards.
Because we only had a very short rehearsal the night before. So did the gig anyway, and it went well. The lads were happy out. So I was just ecstatic. So naturally enough, went and hit the pints. And then but we went and got the catering while we were getting a few points in or whatever. And the spread was just unbelievable. Like an entire stand dedicated to just bread. There was a whole salad bar. Then there was like, you know, the hot food area. So I got my like bits and bobs. And then like I just noticed like a few rows up, there was a woman there like cooking these steaks, and I was like, can I get that even though I've had this? And she was like, yeah, of course you can. And I was like, cool, I'll take a steak then as well. And then she was like, do you want some red wine? I was like, absolutely, yeah. Beautiful stuff.
No way.
I just had this huge spread. And I had my pint or whatever, and I was sitting down. And then next thing, fucking Zach Wilde just walks in. And I was like, lads, I already had a few jars in me as well. And I was like, oh, I need to go say hello, you know. And I went over and said hello to him. Absolute gentleman. And Nikki Six walks in. I was like, well, I have to say hello to Nikki Six.
No way.
And then fucking Dave Mustaine walked in. I was like, lads, I'm not able for this. I'm not ready for this. But it was just one of the fucking nicest moments in my life. I've just like, yeah, it was a good day.
Yeah, you know, it's like, definitely like, especially when you meet these band members and stuff like that, you're like, Jesus, you're the man of just Helly and all that kind of shit. And you're like, holy fuck. And when you're working beside them then and that as well, like that's kind of the next kind of big thing. And, you know, it's a big credit to you in that sense, you know.
I saw Zach and I was like, I wanted to go over and say it. I went over and said it. I was like, can I get a quick picture with you? And he was there like, oh, so how are you? Like, he was kind of just like trying to start up a conversation, but I was so like, oh, I was like, oh Jesus, you know, I just want a photo, you know, like, I just can't do this. I can't do this interaction, you know, like, so I was like, took the photo and fucking legged it. But he was like, there was no like, from his part, you know, there was no, oh, I'll just get this photo done and, you know, be on my way. Like, there was no avoid. He was, if anything, he was actually trying to be sound and have a full-on conversation. I just I didn't have the capacity to just do that in that moment. But
it is. It's crazy. And, like, taking things into account, like, the likes of touring and all that stuff and meeting up with people. And especially, like, when you're that famous, when you get to be that famous, you're kind of like, how many selfies has he done today? And you don't want to approach someone and be a dickhead or whatever, and all that kind of shit. But no, it's always good. Like any time that I've ever met any of the bands, they've always been really kind of, hey, but yeah, no worries. There's a photo. There's a thing. You're having a good weekend. You're having a good, like, good festival or whatever, and pat on the back and all that kind of stuff. The funniest one that I ever noticed was we were working. It was Bloodstock, and it was the Sunday, the festival's over and done. It was the rap party and things like that. And it was to actually see, like, you know, when the tour is finished, sorry, like the gig is over or whatever. There's no, you have 2 days off or 3 days off, and you can kind of let your hair down a bit and then go hell for leather. Like, and to actually just sit down and have conversations with people and talk to them about stuff. And, like that's where you're, That's where it's really, really good, you know, and you can actually give your two cents on something and you're like, yeah, cool. And they take things into account. It was mad. The funniest time I ever, you know, Herman, I think his name's Herman Lee, is in Dragon Force. Okay. Me and him had the same watch, and he was going around and he was like pointing me out going, you see that guy over there? Oh, he's a time traveler too and all. And I'm like, I'm some random dude from Blanche. What are you talking about? He's like, hey, that guy, we have the same watch and all. I was like, I got mine at Argos. What are you talking about? But like things like that. It's just all these memories that you always hold to it. You know, it's class.
Yeah, it was Bloodstock. What was that like?
Yeah, Bloodstock's a cool festival, man. I was the promoter in Ireland for 6 years for the Battle of the Bands style thing. So we were bringing over the unsigned Irish bands to play it. And yeah, Bloodstock is cool. It's a family run independent festival. Has a max capacity of about 20, I think it's like 20 odd thousand. So it's just ideal. Like it's kind of like, you know, when you go to like Electric Picnic and there's like 80,000 people or whatever, and it's just really in your face. This is just kind of like you're sauntering around, having a few beers, and all the stages are close by. You're not like trekking miles and miles and miles for stages and stuff. Yeah, that's good. Where's your favorite festival?
I think the coolest metal festival I was at was I think Grasspop just thought it was class. Those German festivals are amazing, like with Full Force and Wacken and
yeah, I've never been. It was always the next year, you know.
But they're all massive. Like I've gotten to really enjoy small festivals just from having played a lot of the small festivals dotted around Ireland. So I prefer them actually. Like I was, you know, before that I was at like, you know, Download and, you know, back in the day, Oxygen and Electric Picnic and all those ones. And they're all like, they all have their charm. Well, Oxygen was just fucking... To be honest, the small festivals are where it's at. You really grow used to the luxury of just being able to pop out to your tent 5 minutes away to grab your cans to come back in. Like, when you go back to the bigger festivals after having been at a bunch of small festivals, you really feel how much of a pain in the arse it can be, you know, especially if it's like, if it's been wet and it's muddy and yeah. And as well, I like the idea of being able to wander around on my own and be fairly confident that I'm going to run into all my mates again at some point. Whereas at the big festival, you have to stay together. And if you don't, the chances of you finding each other are slim. So therefore you're at the mercy of what the group wants to do. And half the time you're just waiting for people to come back from the jacks, you know?
I know, man. It's a nightmare. It's a fucking bloody nightmare.
Yeah, heading off on my own and knowing that I'm going to bump into somebody, you know, at some point. So I think like, you know, like, so Knockin' Stockin' will be like...
Oh, yeah, like Knockin' Stockin' and stuff, yeah.
It's a beautiful festival. Run by sound heads. Nice and, you know, the rules are reasonable. You can bring your cans in and it's a bunch of... It's largely made up of local acts as well, which is just nice. It's unique, you know.
I've never been to it, but I've worked with a serious amount of bands and stuff like that. And what I loved about it was how diverse that festival was. Is that you have like the dance stuff, the metal stuff, and then you have like really kind of eclectic sort of indie bands, and like there's bands that have been playing where you're kind of going, wow, Jesus, but everyone got the same amount of crowd at it. Everyone enjoyed it, you know. It always seemed real cool.
When Red Enemy were a thing, we were never asked to do any festivals because there was just no festival in Ireland that would cater to a metal band. So when they asked us, we were like, what? You know, we were really surprised. And even then, like we said, yeah, but we had doubts about whether we'd go over well or if anyone enjoyed it or if anyone would even be there to watch it. And it was amazing. It was class crack.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, they were the only festival to ever ask a metal band to do it. And then like in the years that followed, before we could get more metal bands in, it started to become more of a regular thing. And it was deadly. It always went down well. Like it just adds more diversity to the festival, which keeps things fresh during the festival. Like I've been to festivals where it's just tech metal for 3 or 4 days and you don't want to be listening to tech metal for 4 days in a row, you know?
Definitely not. You have to have a diverse kind of thing. That's why I really kind of like I've never been to them now, but like Reading Leeds and stuff like that is where it kind of had, you have kind of like your Skrillex and then you have like your Queens of the Stone Age or whatever. Like it is sort of mainstream, but they had a lot of cool little independent DJs and stuff like that as well, where you can go check it out. And like, that was one thing that I'd definitely love to do. But Desert Fest as well in London. I don't know if you've ever seen that. It's
a band I really want to see called Elder. Have you ever heard of? Have you ever listened to Elder? They played it, and that's how I heard about Desert Fest. But I'd love to go over and just check it out.
Yeah. Oh man, there's. I think every festival as of next year is just. We're all going to be like front row. We're going to use each day as all the holidays and all that kind of stuff. So.
It's going to be absolute mayhem, man. When the gates are open back up, it's going to be tops off running down the streets.
I know, it's going to be unreal. I smart you're seeing that you're doing like drum lessons now and all that kind of stuff. How's that working out?
It's going good. I was doing a metal fabrication course there, like a welding metal fabrication course, because something I've wanted to do for years. My YouTube binge would just be like restoration videos, like all
really?
That.
Yeah.
And but I don't have a breeze how to do any of it. But it's always just been something that I enjoyed watching. So when everything got cancelled, I was getting really restless. So I decided to apply for a course and started it back in October. I was loving it. It was like Monday to Friday, 9 to 3:30. And really into that, really enjoying it. And then when the schools closed just after Christmas, the course closed with it. So I'm waiting for it to open back up. So then like I was just left with nothing to do again, really. So I started giving online lessons to a couple of people that were getting in touch. Before I didn't really entertain the idea because I just didn't know how. I didn't have the setup.
Exactly.
It just seemed like such an overwhelming undertaking, you know. But because of this whole pandemic, a lot of people have become very savvy in, you know, the Zoom world and stuff. And my housemate is one of those people, so he just helped me set it up. And like around that time, somebody, like a friend of mine, was getting rid of an electric drum kit, so I have it just here behind me.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah,
so again, I have that hooked up to my laptop on Ableton, so I can have it. I have it set up through Zoom in such a way that, like, when I play the kit, it comes through the students' monitors, as opposed to like my laptop mic picking up.
Oh, no way.
So they're getting like a better quality signal of what I'm playing. And so once I figured that out, I was like, do you know what? I may as well just see if anyone else is interested in getting some lessons. Because I was enjoying it, you know?
Yeah.
So I've been doing that.
Yeah,
so
that's one thing that I definitely noticed. And was that, like, even from when I would have been a big, say, like Red Enemy fan, Hero and Era fan, and all that kind of stuff, like seeing you on the opposite side, it just always seemed to be that, like, you guys, like at that stage, you guys were, that's what we always sort of aimed to be. It was like, these guys are full time musicians. This is unreal. Like they're making a living out of it. How do they do that? And all, and they're going around and then seeing like the likes of the American tours that you were doing, European tours, and then all that kind of stuff. And we're like, that's unreal. And then when the whole sort of pandemic hit, I was like, oh, bollocks. Because a lot of my mates, especially that they were in the industry, like DJs and stuff like that, a couple of my mates, like, they're working in Harvey Norman now. And then I was like, oh, crap. But I think out of a good few, like, mates that have been, like, proper professional musicians, I think you're probably one of the only ones that jumped in and head first into doing the online lessons.
My housemate, another, like, I live with five other lads and they're all musicians, so and two of those musicians are doing online lessons. So the fellow I was telling you about that's like savvy with Zoom and all the rest, like, he's like an Ableton whiz, so he has begun doing like an Ableton course for beginners via Zoom. And
awesome.
My housemate Sam, he's a guitar player.
Yeah.
Doing the lessons as well. That kind of inspired me to do it because I was a bit like, oh, I don't know how it will. It's one thing doing it on guitar. I just didn't know how it would translate with drums. And but then, like, it just got to the point where I was like, I may as well try it. And when I started doing it, I realized that I was really enjoying it. I thought, like, because it wasn't an in-person, like, a face-to-face experience, that would take away from it.
Yeah,
because of that, you do have to, there are some hurdles you have to work around because you're not in the room with them. But in terms of, like, the human interaction aspect of it, like, it's great, you know. And so, yeah, I've been really enjoying it. But, like, as well, it's the whole pandemic has made me think about exploring other interests I have. So, like, up until now, it's always just been music and trying to make a few pound through music, whatever way I could, like. And now I'm just like, well, and actually a big thing was having a regular sleep pattern.
Oh man, I'm putting my plate down to the, I was like, okay, let's talk about that. Because
yeah,
I was doing all of these shows, like I was doing the event management stuff for Bingo Loco or whatever and all that, and at the weekends it was just like 3-4 o'clock in the morning, getting home, pulling in gear, doing all that kind of stuff. And now it's like 3-4 o'clock in the morning. And I'm just sort of sitting there going, all right. Was that the same for yourself? Eh?
Big time. I kind of gave up on the idea of trying to be a morning person. I just thought it wasn't in me. And a couple of months into lockdown, I'd say about a month into lockdown, like once we got over the, oh, hey, we've got nothing to do, let's watch a movie and drink wine every night. Like once we got over that, like we were all, like everyone in the house was like, I'd love to just establish some sort of routine. We were all craving that routine. So I started going to bed at like 9 and 10 o'clock and adjusting the body clock. And I was getting up at like 6:30 and 7. I was getting so much done before 12 o'clock that I'd have the rest of the day to just chill. And I was loving it. And I was actually noticing my mood becoming a lot more regulated. I wasn't overtired. Really? I wasn't getting those midday slumps.
Mm.
And there was no, like, you know, when you're doing like, like when I say I'm a full-time musician, like it's not like I'm in an originals band and I'm touring all the time. Like when I'm not playing with an original band, I'm playing weddings and corporates or whatever, like wherever the money is. But you're just driving up and down the country and you're like, you know, like you, like driving, getting home at like 4 o'clock. And I probably had a can of Monster on the way home as well because it was like a 3-hour drive.
Yeah.
And then you get in and you just want to sit down and you want to just have a beer to just relax and allow yourself to decompress. And then by that time, it's like 4:30 or 5 o'clock. So yeah, then you're in bed and then like, there's no way you're getting up at 9 o'clock, you know?
Especially after 7 o'clock. Like, after a good gig and you're at home and you're just sort of like, because you have to drive, or especially when you're doing corporate shows or like weddings and stuff like that. And you're like, you're after driving all the way home and you're just sitting there buzzing and everyone's asleep. There's nothing to do and you're just like, ah, no. And then the only people you can talk to are your bandmates, but you're there already after going to your head for the last 4 hours driving home from Cork anyway. So you're like, all right, what's next?
Like, I started to realize this is probably taking years off my life. You know, this shocking sleep pattern. Like, is there something else I could be doing that would allow me to have a bit more of a regular sleeping pattern? Like, having said that, like, you know, if I was, like, so the scratch, like, if that was touring full time, I'd be delighted about that because it would be something that I helped create and it's gotten to the point where it's busy all the time and I can use that as my full-time job. Like, that's great. I'm willing to sacrifice sleep, a regular sleeping pattern for that. But, like, for weddings and corporates and stuff like that, like, I'm not sure I want to be doing that in my 50s. As, like, I don't want to be relying on that.
Yeah, oh, yeah, no, big time. And there's nothing worse, like, because when I first started off, I was a bass player or whatever, and I was going to these venues, and I was going in with my originals band, and I was like, hey, this is my band. And they're like, oh, talk to the blah, blah, blah promoter, or talk to this, or talk to that. And that's pretty much how I jumped into the whole event management thing, was because I was going to these venues, asking them where their promoter was. The promoter was never responding to emails. And this was 10 years ago. So even to get a response off an email anyway, it was next to none. But so I went to the venues and I just was like, hey, I'm a promoter. And they're like, oh, are you? I was like, yeah, can I rent out your venue? And they're like, yeah, yeah, grand. They're like, €250. Here's the backline supplied or whatever. And they're like, and you have the bands and all ready to go. I was like, oh yeah, I have the bands and all there. It's my band. It's like headline slot. Well, hey, happy days, you know? But, and we actually were doing really well. And we had a good turn. Like at the time, like 17, 18, 19, at the time, we're like, oh, 50 people turned up. And we're like, oh, that's unreal. It's the best thing ever. Until the likes of the local pubs and stuff like that were like, can you do covers? And we're like, yeah, you can play a couple of covers. Like, if you play a couple of covers, we'll throw you a couple of £100. And we're like, what? Like, what do you mean? And then you're kind of putting up the passion to go, and so you're telling me, like, I could do the same drive, do the same thing, and if I play someone else's songs, you give me a couple of £100 for it. And you're like, yeah, pretty much, that's how it works. You're like, all right, yeah, fair enough. Now, some musicians and things like that, like singer-songwriters, they get away with it where they can, it's one man and guitar or whatever, and they go in, they sing, do that kind of stuff. But, like, it does kind of dilute the passion a bit, especially for the likes of a paycheck, you know?
Yeah, I'm lucky, like, everyone I play with are my mates. Yeah. So, like, a great laugh. But it's just, yeah, if I don't want to, I enjoy it, but, like, I don't want it to be, if I was to do it full time, and I, like, if there was that pressure of, like, needing it in order to be financially stable,
yeah,
that going into my, you know, or just, you know, 10 years down the line, or, like, when I'm in my 40s, whatever. Because like, it's just, it is so taxing, like.
Yeah.
So.
No, I think it was kind of mad the way the whole, like, the way the scratch sort of came about, because, like, if you're in the metal scene in Ireland, like, it's a tiny metal scene anyway. But when we saw that video pop up on Joe.ie of all you lads just having, like, it was just pure bliss personified, you know? And I think the way it kind of related was, is that people, when they saw it, they were like, here's just a group of lads having the absolute crack. And then however many thousands of views that it got. And then after that, then it was like, oh no, here's a song with it. And here's a this and here's a that. And they're like, these songs are unreal. And it kind of branched out to the heavy metal guys. You go, all right, yeah, fair enough. But then it went into the trad stuff. And then after your couple of albums and things like that, like, it was even hitting kind of like a comedy kind of style thing, the likes of the pull up your jocks and, you know, all the lyrics and things like that when you're listening to the lyrics. And then it kind of branched out to everybody. And do you reckon that's probably one of the reasons why it took off, was because you had the initial video that everyone kind of related to, and then it went on from there? Or what do you think?
I think it caught the attention. I think that video caught a lot of people's attention because it just looked a bit, like, aesthetically, it was four lads with long hair, like, headbanging, but they're playing pretty accessible music, but it's high energy and they look like they're having the crack.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, like, the time, it was just timed right. Whoever uploaded the video just nailed the timing. Because we got back from a festival that we were busking at, which is where that video was shot. It was just outside, like, a bus station. And Doc, one of the guitar players, messaged the group and was like, lads, there's a video of us after going up from Ballyshannon. We're like, oh, that's gas. And then at that point, it was on, like, 100,000 views or something like that.
Yeah.
And then, like, the next day, it was up like a million. And then that's when Joe.ie got in touch and they were like, can we share your video? And then that got a million views and we were just like, Jesus Christ. And then, like, that kicked it all off. That kind of kicked the hype, as it were.
For me, like, being a complete sort of outsider on it, it definitely was kind of like a seed planting moment for it, you know, where it basically, it just sort of blossomed into something where, like, I think that because you guys released like an EP, and then it went from the EP then onto albums and to pressed albums to now you're like playing the Olympia. So to go from that to that is crazy.
Yeah, like that initial bit of hype from the Joe.ie video, it just kind of gained momentum from there. And I think it just resonates with people because we're genuinely just having a bit of crack and we're not taking ourselves too seriously. And we're a good crack to go and see. I think the word of mouth has just spread from people going to see us play. And it's just gradually built up from that, I think.
Yeah, and there's one of the tracks that's on your latest album that was released. And it's some lad talking about it. And he's after having a couple of pints now and he's sitting there. And like, where did that come about? Was that like a WhatsApp thing? Or?
Yeah, a friend of mine sent me that. And he was like, man, I'm just after getting this voice message off my cousin. Because he was apparently like having a few drinks. And he was planning on going to see us play in Carlo or something.
Yeah.
And he just sent my mate that voice message and I fucking lost it. And I forwarded it into the Scratch WhatsApp and the lads were using it. And then, so we were like, I got on to my mate and I was like, hey, do you reckon we could use this for like an intro? Because we planned on using it for the intro to the set.
Yeah.
And so he was cool with that. And then the more we listened to it, the more we were like, oh, we have to put that in the album somewhere. So that was it. Like, we just threw it in.
Do you reckon, you know, the way you, like you guys are completely independent though, aren't you?
We have a manager and we have a booking agent, but we don't have a label.
Yeah, but like imagine if you turned around to a label and was like, yeah, so we got this drunk WhatsApp and it's hilarious and we're going to stick it in the album. Like, it just never in a million years happened. And I think that's one of the best things now when you see these independent bands, when they can actually go out and release tracks and press albums and do that themselves, where it takes away that corporate aspect of it and they can just go and do whatever they want to do and stuff like that. My mate's band, Evil Scarecrow, do the same thing. They're a completely independent band, but like they're headlining festivals and all. They were playing on the main stage to festivals and stuff. So like it's mad playing to like 20,000 people on like a Saturday morning, you know, and a completely independent band, which is amazing.
It's great. It's a great, it's great. Like, I think we're not really, because we're gigging.
Yeah.
We were lucky in that it generated enough income for us to be able to fund our own things. Like Doc is pretty smart with the old merch side of things. So he would invest in merch during times when we'd need a bit of financial help. And then we'd use that to reinvest in more merch and then build that up. And then, you know, we'd be gigging alongside that. And so we've always been in a position up until the pandemic, obviously, but like up until the pandemic, we were always smart with the money we were making. And so we never really needed a label for finance, like, because one of the big things you want a label for is the financial support.
Definitely.
Never needed that, so we've never had that pressure of just constantly trying to seek out a label. Like we're in no rush. Like if somebody, it's not on our fucking radar. You know, we're happy out just doing our own thing.
And I definitely think that actually is a credit to the band as well. Is because when you see the likes of like videos that are reaching a million views on however many platforms, and you're working your way up and you're touring or whatever, like it is very easy for a band to just go, oh, I'm sure there's a label there that'll sign you up straight away and to do all that kind of stuff because of the music that you're playing. Like you could play The Fly and you could play Download, you know, like, and both like groups of fans would equally enjoy it as best they could, you know, like, which for a label, they're just going to see dollar signs and just be like, this is the best thing in the world, you know?
It's class. It's a band that, like, you know, has a fairly broad market in terms of like the age of the people that listen to it. Like my Elwyn likes the album. You know what I mean? Like,
That's amazing.
And then there's like my brother's like 19. He's into it. Like, so there's just a huge, it's really broad market there, which we just fell into.
And that's the thing. Like, it really was. It was just like a fall into kind of situation where the video was released. You had all these kind of riffs, and it's weird how it translates acoustically. Would you ever want to do a full sort of metal kind of production of your tracks, or will you always be on the cajon banging away? Like,
I think the part of the crack for us is just trying to take what we learned from playing metal and using these instruments or applying it to those instruments, you know. We're definitely always trying to evolve the setup. Because we're still trying to figure it out. Like, when we started, we were just busking, and that was easy because the lads just had these little busking amps.
Yeah.
And I was playing the cajon acoustically. But then when we tried to move that onto the stage, there was a lot of obstacles and variables we had to consider. And so we're still figuring that out. So we're still trying to make it punchier and heavier all the time, but still with acoustic instruments. I think we want to keep that on the go because it's just good crack. It's unfamiliar territory for us. So
definitely, yeah. And to be honest, it's sort of a breath of fresh air, really. It's like something that hasn't happened before. And to be honest, when you're listening to your tracks, I always find that it's definitely like, it doesn't matter what one it is, you can still stick it on. It's always going to be a banger. And I think you're probably one of the only bands in the last while that you can listen to an album true and true, and it's not going to be the same thing. Like, each song is, it's basically like an album full of singles, if that makes any sense. You know?
Yeah, thanks, Emil.
I know, but like, it really is. I'm after, you see the joys that are coming in. The joys. So, yeah, I don't know, it's class. And, you know, when you're coming up with the lyrics, what way does that work for you? Like, are you just...
Initially,
and the lyrics or what?
The first two singles that we had lyrics on, we wrote them. I just jotted down some words. I Get It Right Up You and Punisher were the first two tunes with lyrics. And I just got the phone out and was just on notes, and I was just trying to come up with, you know, lyrics. And yeah. So very little thought put into it. And then from there on, I would just try and document any one-liners that I heard anyone say, or any conversations that I overheard where somebody said something gas. I just try and jot it down on the notes. And then when I was touring quite a bit in 2019, so I was on a lot of planes, and so I kind of got into this routine where I try and, before I'd fall asleep or watch movies, I'd just try and write one verse, and it wouldn't have to be related to anything. It was just what's the name of that process? But it would just, I'd be trying to access that like train.
Brainstorming kind of thing is you have like it.
Yeah. And I just try and bang out a verse before I watch Bleeding Avatar or whatever.
Yeah, man, there's nothing worse than you're sitting on a plane, some fuckers after taking off his shoes and socks, and you're looking at it and it's like, oh, I'm here for the next 4 hours.
Yeah.
But when you're sitting that in and kind of like an artistic kind of thing, you're kind of going, you know, like it's
so many, like we did a tour of Australia and New Zealand, and we did what was it 15 flights in 12 days or 12 flights in 15 days? I think it was 12 flights in 15 days. And like, it was just madness. Like we'd get to the venue, we'd do a sound check, and then we do a meet and greet. But because we were like headlining, we wouldn't be finished until 11, half 11, and we take down the gear. By the time we get out of the venue, it'd be like, or leaving the venue, it'd be like 1 o'clock, get back to the hotel, get 3-4 hours sleep, and then fly to the next place, because you had to fly everywhere.
Yeah,
it wasn't a bus or anything like that, so we were just exhausted. So like, you could be, you know, I just like it got to the point where I'd be getting on a plane and it wouldn't matter what was going on. It could be crashing for all I knew.
Yeah, there is.
It didn't matter. Like I was going to go to sleep either way, but I'd still try and bang out a verse.
Yeah. Well, one of the funniest stories that I've ever had getting on a plane, it was actually to fly back from Australia. I was in Sydney and turned around. It was a full flight and it was like a full flight. And I turned around to the guy and I was like, "Here, mate, I know you're on the window seat. Is there any chance that we can swap? I'll go on the window seat and I'll just go to sleep. I'll be asleep for the 7 hours. So I'm going to take two of these magical pills here and it's going to be good night, Irene." And your man goes, "No, what if the plane crashes?" And I was just like, "Well, if the plane crashes, it's not going to make any difference, you know? Like, it's like, all right." I was like, what difference is it going to make for me sitting on the outside rather than the inside?" And I said it to him. I was like, "Right, this is the crack. I'm going to take these two tablets, but if I'm sitting on the outside, I'm going to be comatose. You're not going to be able to, like, I'm not going to be able to open my eyes, you know?" Yeah. And he was like, "Oh, no, it's grand. It's a cork man. It's a cork man thing." So I was like, "All right." I said, "Are you sure?" And your one comes around with, like, the flight was delayed. So she comes around with, like, this complimentary champagne thing. It was like, "Oh, here, have a flute of champagne," or like Moe or whatever. And I was like, "Are you sure now?" Your man's like, "Yeah." I was like, "There you go, glass of champagne. Night, night." And your man's like, "Ha, ha, ha, yeah." And it was a 7-hour flight to Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
And I didn't move. And your man was bursting for a piss. And he, like, I woke up to him just straddling me. And I was like, "What are you doing to me?" And he's like, "You weren't messing about that piss, were you?" I was like, "What?" He got up. And yeah, your man was sitting there for the whole thing. But that's what I have to do now. Like, if there's going to be doing these long haul flights or whatever, just say, "Here, I'm going to go to sleep for the whole thing," or try my best to go to sleep. Because I think once you're awake, you're just going to be awake for the whole yoke, you know?
How do you find flying?
I've only ever really had one proper bad experience when we were flying to Ibiza. And like you'd always say, like, an air pocket or whatever, but the plane was like driving and it just went whoop and it done this big like dip and everyone, hands up in the air, "Oh geez," people started crying, "Oh no," and I was just like, it's grand. But a couple of my mates now, they're pretty tough, like they're pretty like very hard kind of flyers, you know. You kind of have to sit them down, give them their liquid breakfast at the start, everything's going to be okay, like all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I've flown with some people that are, well, just one person in particular that I think of, like, he was like, I'd only met him, we were doing a gig in, where was it? I think it was Italy, maybe. But anyway, he was, or no, it was England. That doesn't matter. But he was telling me, like, "Oh, I'm a pretty bad flyer, so just mind yourself." And I was like, "All right, cool, yeah." Not really thinking much of it. And then we just start going down the runway, and then he just starts, like just hands gripping his knees, and he's just, like, freaking out, just like, "Oh, geez, here we go now. And then, like, as soon as it's, you know, when it just goes and it speeds up, he was like, oh, God, and just starts, like grabbing me and, like, and burying his face in my arms and stuff. And I was like, and initially, like, when he started freaking out, like, he was doing the whole, like, rubbing his hands off his thighs, I was like, this is going to be hilarious. And I was like, so I got my phone out and I was going to record him. And then it just kept escalating. And I was like, then I went from, like, this is gas to, like,
yeah.
I actually feel kind of bad for him now. And then, like, just as I put the phone away, like, that was when he just started, like, burying his face in my arm and, like, just, like, grabbing me and stuff. And I was like, fucking hell.
Yeah, that's crazy. And especially if you're in that situation where you need to travel, you know, like if you're in a band or you're a tour manager or roadies or whatever, and you're traveling and stuff like that. Like, I've worked with a couple of guys, and like, especially like tour managers are grand, but it's the band's manager that flies with them and stuff, and they touch down, or especially like a long haul ferry trip, and you're like, "Oh, hey, where's your manager?" And they're like, "Oh, she's in the boot of the van." And you kind of like open the door and it's just a big ghost face, you know, and they're just shrugged up and it's death, like absolute death. But would you have any sort of tips and tricks then for traveling, or what would you be saying? Like, airport security is your best friend.
For touring, I would say bring sandals, because especially if it's a long one, because rather than use up all your socks, so like when you're like a couple of weeks in and you're only getting to shower like, you know, once every 2 days, you might get to shower every day, so your clothes just start getting shock, you know, they just start getting smelly.
You're not walking off, really.
Yeah, and you don't always have a chance to wash your clothes, and but if you have a fresh pair of socks, that's just heaven some mornings. You know what I mean? Like, and so in order to preserve all the socks, instead of having just this huge bag of, you know, dirty socks just piling up in your suitcase, just on travel days, just wear sandals. You don't have to wear socks. And then on days like if you've a day off and you're going out, or if you want to just chill in the evening, just throw on a little pair of socks. So it just means like, yeah, just get sandals for all the traveling, and then that will mean that you'll have enough pairs of socks, fresh pairs of socks, to chill in.
Yeah,
man, just be glad, you know, 3 or 4 weeks into a tour where you're just wrecked.
And you know, like when you return or whatever, or even traveling. Like even when we went over to Spain, like I had a bag or whatever, but your bag was minimalist compared to mine. You were just like little backpack kind of stuff. And I was like, holy shit. But you had like everything covered. You were like socks, t-shirt, shorts, whatever. Boom. Happy days.
I got back from a tour that day and dropped. I met my dad at Dublin Airport and gave him my drum gear and like my suitcase, and then took my backpack and just walked back into the airport. And then it was literally just like dropped my stuff off and then hopped back into the airport and hopped on the plane. And then that's where I met you.
Yeah.
We met in Spain, didn't we?
It was in Spain. The whole Spain thing. That ruined my record, because that was like anytime I ever went, it's going to be like the most stereotypical Irish thing, but anytime I've ever been to the airport, I've never been in a situation where I couldn't have a pint, you know, like, oh, last pint on home ground soil, all that kind of stuff, and
yeah.
We're all lads on tour kind of thing, and all that stuff. But that was the first time where it was like strict diets, no alcohol, no nothing, hadn't a clue what we were getting ourselves into. All that kind of stuff. But how do you feel after the whole Spanish thing?
Amazing. I mean, it felt unbelievable. Floated home.
Yeah.
I was so stressed out from the dieta. I didn't enjoy the dieta at all. Like, I tried to follow it as strictly as I could, and I went for 2 weeks. I did it for 2 weeks before the thing.
Yeah.
I was hating it. So by the time we got there and we did the ceremony, like by the time we sat in the Maluka for the first ceremony, I was so ready. You know, like I wasn't even nervous anymore. I was just like, I felt like I'd sacrificed so much. I'm just fucking ready. Like whatever is coming, I'm just ready for it. And then, yeah, coming home, I felt amazing. I felt the lightest I've ever felt in my life. Yeah. I really got a lot out of it. How did you find it?
When I went over, like I was very kind of skeptical on the whole thing. I wouldn't necessarily be a spiritual person or anything that like that. And I tried to stick to the diet thing as best I could. But sure, like, you know, us, man, like trying to do that and trying to not eat meat and to do all that kind of stuff. But then when I got there, I think it was did you do the Cambo stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the kind of the Cambo stuff that kind of pushed me over the edge. I was like, holy shit. Cause that was mental. That was insane. And I was like, that was crazy. And it definitely takes you out of your comfort zone when you see like people get sick and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, whoa, this is a bit crazy. But then like the first day and the first night or whatever, but then by like day four, ceremony four, I was like, all right, what's the crack? How are you doing? Gives me bucket. Well, let's go. You know, it definitely opened my mind up to things where, like, as it stands now, like, there's just like, even you're driving in the car and someone starts beeping at you and you're like, man, I literally don't care. Like, life's too short, you know, like, and that's definitely what I took for it. What did you get? You got, you were just on cloud nine, like from the very beginning, to be honest.
Yeah, I felt like that as well. Small things weren't annoying me, weren't bothering me. I lost all social anxiety that I would have had before doing the ceremony. I remember, like, for a couple of weeks afterward, I'd walk into certain situations and I'd just feel so calm. And I'd be, like, surrounded by people. I never had, like, major social anxiety, but I'd just feel a bit stiff in certain scenarios. And I remember for a good couple of weeks after, you know, walking into those scenarios and thinking to myself, before ayahuasca, I would have been feeling different to how I'm feeling now.
Yeah.
And I felt very calm and very okay with being myself in social gatherings. And that was huge for me. I really got a lot from that. And I wasn't afraid to be, I just wasn't, anxiety just left me, you know?
That's what I definitely, like, my anxiety kind of side of things and all that kind of stuff was down to like other people's kind of, like, or are they talking about me, or are they doing that kind of stuff. Especially after taking it, I was just sort of like, I don't really care, like, it's just all right, fair enough. If you have an issue with me, just say it to me or whatever, or any of that kind of stuff. And
during the ceremony
During the ceremony, I was bollocks, man. You know, I was in bits. I was seeing things. I was like, whatever. And then, like, they came over to me. Still to this day, like, there's been moments and times where, like I had, like, a full-blown panic attack during it. And they put the Aguaflora stuff on my hands, and they're like, oh, here, try this one. This one was made by a Colombian, a shaman's mother up the side of the mountain in Colombia. And I was like, oh, yeah, I got, and I done that. I was like, oh, Jesus. And it was like doing a line of a kaleidoscope, man. It was just, and she was like, you're right now. And I was like, yeah, just give us a minute there, you know. It was very intense. Like,
I was pissing myself laughing. I like, not at anyone in particular, like, I was. So, you know the way, like, so we're talking about ayahuasca anyway, so...
Yeah, sorry, that is one thing that we have to say. Myself and Lango flew over to Spain. At the time, we didn't really know each other. We flew over to Spain to do an ayahuasca retreat with basically, was a team of, well, about, there was two Colombian shamans and a couple of life coaches, and then a group of about 10 people, 10, 12 people, I think.
Yeah, it was in a retreat center called the Crystal Inn, and it was on top of a mountain on the outskirts of Malaga. And me and Kev met each other at the Malaga airport, and then we were, so, like, the Crystal Inn, the retreat center itself, like, it was like a big bungalow house, and then there would be, like, cabins dotted around the land. And me and Kev were paired up in a cabin together. And so that was the crack. And we did four ayahuasca sessions over the course of 5 days. And it was unbelievable. But, like, the first night, like, so how they do it is you'd walk into what's called a maluca, and it's just like a big tent. And everyone would go up one at a time and drink a cup of ayahuasca. And for the first hour, everybody sat in silence, in darkness. And then after the first hour, the shamans would start playing tunes and chanting and stuff. And if you wanted to go for a second glass of ayahuasca, you could. So did you go for the second one?
I went up for the second, but I only did it the once. Like, yeah. I went up for the second on the first night. And then after that, then it was, I had one, and then we did the little one and stuff. But It's very heavy, like, it's a heavy kind of thing.
You got hit hard the first night. I had a unbelievably pleasant time the first night. Like, it So after the first glass, when we were sitting in darkness, I just felt nothing. I was like, there's nothing happening here. And then, you know the way you're kind of, you know, when you start just kind of looking for something, you're like, am I feeling that? You know, and it's like, I'm pretty sure I'll be feeling it. You know, I'm pretty sure I'm going to know when things are kicking off. So I got a second glass in and then sat down, lit up a smoke. And then I just felt the tingly feeling all over my body. And Emmy was playing a didgeridoo at this point, and her dad was just like playing this like hypnotic beat, like a doom, da, da, doom.
Oh, man.
My eyes were closed and I could just see, like, you know, like the start of like a Batman movie where it's just like this overcasty, dark, cloudy sky. And that's what I could see. And I was just like traveling through this really overcasty, cloudy Batman sky. And then all of a sudden that just opened up and just burst into a million colors with like geometric shapes flying out the wazoo. I was like, Jesus, I'm feeling that. And then all the while, it's just like, drum going 90. And I was just like, this is amazing. I could just feel this, like, it was like, you know, when, you know, that film, The Mummy, when, you know, those little bugs and they get into your skin and they crawl around. Yeah.
It just felt like
it was just like coursing through my body. And then, like, going around, I could feel it just going around to the back of my head, and it was like doing a spiritual operation on the back of my brain or something. That's what it felt like, something was happening around the back of my head, and then I could feel it going around to the front of my face, and I could just feel this like smile appear. And then just as that started happening, everyone just started getting sick, like blowing chunks, but like roaring into the buckets. Like, it wasn't like a little, you know, it was like,
it was.
So I just started laughing at that, because like I wasn't feeling sick at all. I was like, I was feeling amazing, and I was also aware of the fact that I might need to purge, and I was dreading that because I hate
getting sick. And
so I was like, well, fuck it, like, you're feeling amazing, so if it happens, it happens. Meanwhile, everyone else is just screaming into the buckets. And I just couldn't stop laughing at that. And then people, like, then I heard like a little slight fart. And then that, like, I was just like, you know, on the verge of laughing. And that was gas. And then I was like, I don't want to be roaring laughing, because I don't want to, you know, everyone's on their own spiritual journey. I don't want to just start fucking taking the piss and ruining everyone's trip. But then, like, the people just kept puking. And then, you know, like, somebody obviously just went for a serious puke, and then at the same time their body just decided to fart. And it was like, and they're just like, and then lost it. Like, I lost it. And then, like, one of the lads beside me, he started laughing. And then everyone just started laughing. And
it happened. So I was lying down beside, I can't even remember who it was, and I done a little sneaky squeaker, and I was like, whoop. And she was like, "You all right, Kev?" I was like, "I just farted." And she was like, "Poof." And she just started laughing. But it was in this kind of, like, it was so subtle, but like the one thing that definitely kind of, I was like, "Oh, it's all gone." I was like, "Oh, okay, that's not too bad." The guitar come out, the stuff come out, and I was like, "Poof, there you go." I'm like, "Oh, Jesus." Back at it again, and like,
I was out of it. Like, it was absolutely amazing. I felt so much love for myself and love for every living thing. It was such an intense feeling of love for everything and anything. And I was just rolling around with this feeling of ecstasy. Like, that was what my first night was like. I couldn't have gone any better. Meanwhile, you're over the other side of the room, like, fucking going through it.
Yeah, like, what happened?
Face for your demons.
Yeah, so, do you know what? It was only until afterwards, I don't know, have you ever listened to Frank Carter and the Rattlesnakes? He would have been...
Not a band, I haven't listened to him, though.
He would have been the lead singer at Gallows. Yeah. And then he has his own band or whatever. Well, he was, like, one of my favourite bands. And... So my vision, or what I saw when we took the ayahuasca, was millions and millions of spiders. And what everyone kind of tells you to do, like life coaches or whatever, when it comes to anxiety or whatever, they say, okay, ground yourself, close your eyes, do your deep breaths, like in for six, out for six, or all that kind of stuff. When you're doing the likes of ayahuasca and stuff, what happened to me was, it's like when I closed my eyes, I was getting these like really intense visuals, which was then making me panic. And then when I opened my eyes, the visuals were still there. There was still kind of stuff happening. I was like, oh, bollocks. there was nothing worse. And I was like, all right, now I'm really screwed. So I was like, all right, now try focus back on your breath and stuff like that. But it was actually one of the lads that was sitting beside me, Shane. He was like, I think he's from Taller, so he's from Dublin anyway. He said, here, your man's fucked over there. And I was just like, thanks, mate. Yeah, that's great. Thanks very much. And yeah, like he turned around, and that's when the guys came over and all that kind of shit. They got it sorted. And it was mad, like, because, well, I'm sure everyone went through like pretty bad stuff, but your man, he was like rubbing me back and hit me with sticks, and then there's like blowing smoke on me. He's like, Jesus. I was like, all right, Jack Rat. And he's like, there you go, here. And then he was like, here, have a smell of this. And I was like, oh, brother, what's this? Like, but it's kind of mad thinking afterwards that, so anyway, back to the whole Frank Hart and the rattlesnakes thing, was that he has a lyric, a butterfly can't love a spider. And I never thought about it at the time, never thought about it, whatever. It was grand, cool. But my whole thing was that there was these millions of spiders with a caterpillar on top. And there was like a caterpillar chilling on top of these spiders. And that was it. Like that was the thing. And it was like, oh no, you're going to become a beautiful butterfly and all this stuff. I was like, what? Like, this is just like that. That's the thing that you were seeing. And yeah. Like I was seeing mad stuff. I thought I was painting at one stage. And it was great. It was a great sort of thing. It's definitely a place like where we're at now. I'd be like, I'd love to be there now just to chill, hang out in the spot. Like, would you be the same?
Not big time. The second night I had a bit of a howler. That was really intense for me. Like, I feel like the first night she was like, oh, I'm gonna just give you a good time tonight, and you know, tell you to love yourself and remind you that you are enough, all that kind of jazz. And then second night she's like, right, I'm gonna give it to you now. Like, and I don't remember seeing anything in particular. I just remember feeling this claustrophobic, this overwhelming claustrophobic sensation. You know, it reminded me of, actually, like when I was thinking about it afterward, it actually reminded me of this nightmare I used to have as a kid, reoccurring nightmare all the time. And when I'd have it as a child, my parents would like wake up and hear me like running around the house in my sleep, essentially. And then I'd have to be like calmed down. I'd just be in hysterics. Yeah. I'd always be saying different things, but I could never remember what the nightmare was the next day. They'd always just be like, oh, you were talking about this. And I was like, oh, geez, I don't remember any of that. But I remember the feeling I had when I had that nightmare. And it was the exact same feeling I had when I was doing that second ceremony, except I was conscious and I had to, you know, live with it for about 3 or 4 hours or however long.
What felt like that amount of time.
So it was really intense. I remember at one point Claire coming over and she was asking, was I all right? And it sounded like she was 1,000 miles away. And I remember when she asked me, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to answer. Like, I couldn't remember how to speak to somebody. You know, I was like, how do I do this again? I'm so lost. Like, I felt like I was melted into the bed. And I remember just turning around and going, yeah, I'm grand, yeah. And then just like rolled back around again. I knew I wanted to just kind of go through it on my own. I felt like this is insane right now, but I feel like I'm okay. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm all right. I think that's what, like, in my mind, that's what I was being told to do, like just to face it on your own kind of thing. So I was just set on doing that. But it was rough, like hours of just that really intense claustrophobic feeling. But coming out of it the other end, I felt really relieved. I felt quite liberated.
Yeah. And do you know what? The one thing that I definitely kind of, like after doing the ceremonies or whatever, I don't know if this happened to you. Like when the guys turned around, they said, once the sun comes up, that's pretty much it. Like there's going to be no, like there's a possibility that you could still have like the ayahuasca or whatever. And you could still be seeing shapes and stuff, but it'd be very rare. It should only really last about say 12 hours or whatever. So, okay, yeah, that's fine. So I kept on hearing this rooster outside. And this, so when I heard the rooster, I was like, oh, that means it's morning time. That means it's game over. That's whatever. And it was only until the fourth day where I said it to Carlos about it. I was like, what's the crack with that rooster, man? And he's like, oh, that rooster hasn't a clue what time it is. It just keeps on going like throughout the whole day. Like it could be 12 o'clock at night and he'll think it's the morning, you know? And for me, that was kind of like a big eye opener is then when you have like your set belief, as in it could be something as silly as a rooster will only kind of do his cock-a-doodle-doos first thing in the morning when the sun comes up. But that's not necessarily true and things like that. Like they were kind of things that at the time I never would have thought twice about it. I was like, oh yeah, it's just a stupid rooster, it's just a stupid animal or whatever. But thinking back on it now, you're kind of going like, how many times do you bring that into effect into your own life? You know, where you have like a big set belief where you're like, oh no, this is it. It's black and white, whatever. It's not the case at all. You never know what could happen.
Yeah.
Things like that. It does get very kind of spiritual in that sense, you know?
Are you going to go back?
Yeah. To be honest, I was actually going to text you and say, when do you go back and all? Because any time I went to book in or to do any of that stuff, it was always cancelled and things like that. So, it was pretty shitty. To be honest,
yeah, I was going to go back last April, and the dates have just been pushed back and back because of all this. But I'm dying to go back. I'm really I was really looking forward to just like recharging the batteries last April and going over and just coming back with that feeling. Like you're just, it's like you just feel fresh and ready to just take on the rest of the year, kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was looking forward to that because I was planning on making it an annual thing until I felt like I don't need to go back anymore. But
exactly, yeah.
I'm dying to go back, man. I'm really.
No, big time. It's definitely something I'd love to do. And especially now since there's like all of this sort of digital nomad stuff that's happening, you're kind of going, like, Ireland's freezing, you know? Mine staying at the side of Malaga. Like, they had Wi-Fi and all that kind of stuff. And
true.
Maybe I'll be able to teach drums over there or something, you know.
That'd be great. I really liked the family as well. Like I had some great conversations with them. Like,
yeah.
Naki and Emmy and stuff. They're lovely.
What kind of was a big kind of standout to me was how unbelievably hard I thought the diet was gonna be a couple of weeks beforehand compared to the food that we had over there that tasted amazing.
She wasn't enjoying it at all because she couldn't use any of the spices that she had, but it was still unbelievable.
I know, yeah.
What I was eating on the lead up, like I was eating like raw broccoli and just like the only thing I had were cigs.
That was
the one comfort I had in the lead up to it. But like when we got over there, the food was phenomenal.
Like it was so good. It was so good. And I definitely go back. I actually, after the whole experience, like I would have been like talking to Claire like that on like a fortnightly basis, like every 2 weeks to see, like checking in and doing all that kind of stuff. But straight afterwards, she was just like, Kev, there's not, like, you're grand. You're all right. If there's an emergency or if there's a this or if there's that. And she was like, just hit me up then. But like afterwards, like even in regards to kind of anxieties and things like that, it was amazing. Goals are set, all that kind of stuff was kind of mad. But just to kind of, I know we've been kind of rambling on about like the likes of Malaga and ayahuasca and Cambo and stuff. So I'm just kind of going to go over, how do you have much food left? Have you got much food? What way is it working out?
A fair bit of food, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So if you want to just have a, because I'm going to tuck into the rest of this as well, and we'll be able to finish. It's probably cold now, though, is it?
I mean, I don't know, a few bites, you know.
I probably need to zap it up. But so what ways so I just have kind of a couple of questions that I wrote down. So yeah. I think we kind of went through the likes of the tour travel questions, any tips and tricks. So well, here's one for you, actually. What are your main do's and don'ts when it comes to trying out a new restaurant?
What are your do's and don'ts? Give me some inspiration here.
My biggest thing is that you're walking past a restaurant and say you're on a strip or whatever, you're going in, there's a lot of places. If there's no one in it, don't go. That's my rule of thumb. If there's no one sitting in the restaurant, avoid it like the plague. Avoid it like COVID-21. My thing is that if it's a busy restaurant, go in. You may as well wait the 20 minutes and go in. And the next one is eat where the locals eat. So if you're in Thailand and you see a lot of people that are queuing up for a place, you know it's going to be good. They're kind of my kind of two tips and tricks on it.
They're solid. I think I'm at the mercy of like the charm of whoever is greeting me at the door or whatever. If they're like, if I buzz off them, chances are I'm going to go in and have a look.
Oh, good. Yeah. That's funny you say that, because the next question that I have wrote down here is called Hey Del Boy. So the Hey Del Boy is you're in a street, you could be in Portugal, Spain, Thailand, Vietnam, whatever, and you get approached by that guy. He's selling you a wooden giraffe, he's selling you a Rolex or some Ray Berries or whatever. What do you do? What's your get out of jail?
I always say, so I used to do fundraising. I used to be one of those chaps that would try and stop you on the street to get you to sign.
Oh, no way. So you know the sus.
But I used to love those people who would bow out graciously or bow out. They'd say hello first of all, and they go, "I'm not interested, but thanks, and best of luck. Have a good day." They were just sound.
Yeah. And
when you're getting, you know, when you're getting a cluster bomb of fuck offs from angry people all day, that's just really refreshing. So I apply that to any scenario where I'm being approached. So like, and that would include like people who are trying to sell me something, like a polite but firm no thanks.
Yeah.
And I think you know you don't have to be aggressive or a prick to get them to stop. You just have to be firm, but just be sound about it. Like,
yeah.
Out there is because they're struggling to get, well, not, but like they're hustling because they have to.
Yeah.
They'd rather be drinking pints or whatever it is they like to do. So there's just, yeah, I keep that in mind.
Ah, cool. Well, that's I think that's pretty sound. So just to kind of wrap things up so you'll be able to finish it off. So the full order that you got then was a chicken stir fry and some cheesy wedges.
Yeah.
And a can of Coke. What was the price then in the end? What way did it come out to?
It was €18 minus VAT and delivery. You know the way they kind of sneak that in at the end.
Yeah, little snakes.
So I think it was 21 something or other. I'll tell you that. 21.49 altogether, including delivery.
That's not too bad. And who did you use? Did you use Just Eat or Uber Eats or Just Eat? Yeah. Cool. Would you order it again? What do you think?
No.
No.
I think I haven't given up on the Boxy House, but I just wouldn't get this lineup again. I wouldn't mind trying something else.
Cool. And who is your hometown hero? So that's kind of the next question that you have. So your hometown heroes, who would be your regular? Sorry, like, are you going to go to a Macari's? Are you like, what way does it work for your regular takeaway?
There's a Chinese takeaway around the corner called Lock Moon, and they do beautiful dishes. They do like beautiful satay sauces. There's also two banging chippers. Two Borzas.
Oh yeah.
And we've gotten to know them over the years because we've just been in there so many times after a couple of pints, whatever. And they're sound. They're so nice. And they do banging chips. A serious chip from Borza on the Whitehall Road. If you ever find yourself down that way. Yeah, say hello to Val.
Good stuff. And then what was I going to say to you? Right, so then last but not least, the last kind of section on it is called Squash and Beef. So what I wrote down here is, what does the guest want to promote? So is that you want to promote? Anyone who they want to give a shout out to? Or then at the end, or just call out an ex-girlfriend from secondary school for going off with your best mate. So that's pretty much it. If you want to squash some beef, if you want to turn around and say something about somebody or any of that kind of stuff, it's a bit of a joke, you know, yourself. But yeah.
What do I say? I'll check out my band, The Scratch. I'm giving, if you want to play drums or the cajon, I'm giving online lessons. Go on to Lango Drums. Oh, is it Lango Drum? Lango Drum Bookings at gmail.com. Or get me on Instagram at Lango Drums. Lango _ Drums. Giving lessons. Any beefs?
I say you might give your beef to all takeaways that are putting in cold cans of Coke beside your hot food.
Yeah, sort that out. Yeah, if you're watching and you work in the takeaway industry, set the Coke aside, you know? Just go there. It'll be appreciated.
Yeah. Oh, happy days, man. No, that's cool. And yeah, no, thanks very much for taking the time to hop onto the podcast and stuff like that. So, but anyway, I won't keep you waiting anymore. And so you'll be able to finish off your grub. No, seriously, man. Thanks very much for this. I'll give you a quick text when we're going to do the launch and stuff like that. It's going to be on YouTube and then all the platforms and stuff. So at the takeaway, man. And I'm going to leave all links to all Lango's, basically all Lango's endeavors in all the descriptions and stuff like that. So thanks very much for everybody checking it out, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Oh, man, good chatting to you.
Yeah, you too. Well, cheers. Thanks very much, man. Have a good one. See you later.
Boy, now. Boy.